Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Good morning. Today is Thursday, November 7th. This is the Main Course OG. I'm Emily Pearson, and I'm here in studio with my co-host, Patrick Martins.
Hey, I'm so excited to be here.
Oh my gosh. First time? First time caller, long time fan?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's what you are for sure. You only founded the network 10 years ago, and Monday is the Heritage Radio Network 10th anniversary gala at the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens.
Monday, yeah, with the an 11th. Amazing array of chefs, right? Can you rattle them off really quick? What restaurants are represented? Marta, Daily Provisions,
Winsun, Momofuku Nishi, Saxelby Cheesemongers, Casella's Prosciutto. We also have, oh, there's not the full invite here, Roberta's Bread.
Bakery, yeah.
Cheeses from Wisconsin.
We have Park Avenue from the Quality Meats Group.
That's right. Marlo and Daughters is going to be in the house.
Is going to be doing a carving station. 70 pounds of prime rib, which is the only thing I couldn't get donated.
Of course, so it's the most expensive. You're going to eat it all. Right?
Well, I'm going to be there for sure. I'm going to feel like I deserve at least a pound of that.
But it's an awesome lineup. There's a VIP hour from 6 to 7, and there's regular tickets from 7 until whenever the party's over. Mm-hmm. They do a live auction and I think an online auction. Mm-hmm. But there is more information at heritageradionetwork.org/gala. And we will all be there.
And congratulations to you. I'm sure all of you know that Emily is kind of taking the lead in the Heritage Charcuterie movement. That's charcuterie made by America's greatest artisans using 100% pasture-raised heritage breeds. So three of her kind of pet projects have been awarded a national award, a good food award. They're finalists, let's say.
So the awards are in January out in California, and everybody gets announced officially then, but they do it by region, and there's, I think, 15 different categories.
So when we looked at the region of charcuterie, we realized that our people probably had to win because they didn't have people in the same state
Patrick
or region.
Patrick and I were counting how many are in the East, how many are in the South, but we're really excited.
So congratulations, Edward Suriano Ham, Cesare's Prosciutto.
Prosciutto Speciale.
And Volpe's Heritage Prosciutto. So good job, Emily. Yeah, those are big awards.
Oh, thank you. Patrick, you've been a Sam is much before my time, and true. The Suriano is awesome.
But I will give you credit for it on air.
You. Oh, I appreciate it.
Sure.
So Halloween has come and gone. We've changed the clocks. It's now dark when you walk outside at 5 o'clock, and it's feeling like winter. Patrick, you were telling me about Scorsese really hating on the Marvel movies this week.
Well, he hates the Marvel movies. He says there's no character tension and that, you know, if you're a young director with the dream and really creative, there's not that many opportunities anymore because such a high percentage of the movies are these Marvel comics. And then some actors got mad at him, like Samuel L. Jackson got mad, and I guess anyone who's been very successful in Marvel movies are like, fuck you, Scorsese. But I like it. I mean, he just came out with The Irishman, which everyone says is fantastic, and it's good that those movies get
apparently
a little
everybody's
bit of a
wearing
bump.
Blue color contacts in The Irishman movie. They got to really look the
Irish
part.
Are you offended as an Irishman that three Italians were used to play Irishmen?
Someone corrected me. Someone said, is it De Niro is actually Irish, not Italian? But I felt like they had this sort of Italian persona. Every movie, Pacino and even like Steven Van Zandt, and everyone had this sort of Italian way about them. But I heard they're fantastic. So, all right, we are going to jump into our weekly based. We have some awesome guests in the studio. We're going to start with the game of word association. First up, we have Dave Campagnello. Did I say that right, Dave?
Campagnello.
Campagnello of Arancini Brothers.
No, you mispronounced it again.
Campagnello.
Kempin.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, okay. Now he's going to say whatever
yeah,
you
whatever,
said
he was okay. going to say. Was okay. So our good friend and neighbor here in Bushwick, Dave, your word is balls.
Word association?
Yeah.
Balls.
Whatever you think about.
Chutzpah. Arancini. Bon Scott.
I like chutzpah. We
should have just... Bon Scott.
AC/DC.
Oh, I see.
Big balls. How many do I need?
No, you don't need any. It was just more like what comes to mind.
That was brilliant. That was the best ever. In fact, don't say another word for the whole show.
Perfect.
That was perfect.
All right. Also in the studio with us, we have Jessica Geddes, an alum of Roberta's here, and a wine enthusiast, server, jack of all trades, currently at Vinegar Hill House. Jessica, your word is hospitality.
Accountability. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
And if I said accountability, would you say hospitality? No.
Probably.
No, that would be like, I would think of an abacus. Counting. Accounting.
Oh, that's not where my head went with that one.
Yeah.
But I like that.
Yeah, like accountability. Everyone is here for each other.
So
front
we
of house,
met
back of house, guess.
True. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, we met at Vinegar
Hill. I've known her at Roberta's, and then I saw her at Vinegar Hill House. And so we were like, oh my God, you guys are going to do the radio. This is awesome.
Yeah, but actually what I heard happen is Patrick invited you on the radio. You were like, no.
Oh, I started sweating.
I'm nervous. I can't do that. And then by the end of the meal, you came back and you were like, okay,
here's
I'm
my
ready.
Card.
I've prepared.
Yeah.
All right, we also have Serena Snyder in the studio with us, social media communications extraordinaire, and our friend from the film Eating Animals, and a current journalism grad student at Columbia University. I kind of give it away. Your word is eating animals. Go.
Cow. Chicken. Fish. I just think of the actual animals that we eat.
And mostly get treated unjustly. Well, ultimately, almost all of them have the ultimate injustice, but it's how they live their life, right? I mean, that movie was a lot about that.
Yeah, exactly. And it's about the farmers who are trying to treat them better, which has a silver lining.
There was that terrible scene, I think, of the most lasting moment. They didn't even talk about it much. Was that weird milk? That dripping milk or so? What was that?
Well, there's... you mean like... when the cows, when they were like trying to mechanically milk them.
Yes, and it you saw a dripping milk that looked yellow and totally inappropriate
exactly.
to drink.
I mean, it's just like, in general, there's so many antibiotics that the cows, you know, are given that they basically, the milk and quality is just pretty bad. You don't want to be ingesting it.
Yeah, for sure.
So when I segue to talk about the fatal stabbing that happened at Popeyes, and is there any food you would risk being stabbed for? Is yours milk?
I mean,
dripping
milk.
Dripping milk?
No, I mean, I would stab for organic milk if there was only like one left in the world. No, just kidding.
No,
I wouldn't
not.
Stab for
okay,
anything.
So this has been all the news this week. It's crazy. First of all, the news was about Popeye's fast food chain bringing back their chicken sandwich. And then within, I don't know, a couple hours, there was the news that someone had been fatally stabbed. Is there a food any of you would risk being stabbed for?
Or be in a situation so risky and dangerous, you know?
Yeah, I guess it would be circumstantial. Like if it was the only food.
If it was the last baguette and the world was ending.
Or you had this great butter.
You're going to die anyway.
The head
you know what?
It. You
I think it's if you're
going to
die anyway. Maybe. Oh. Otherwise, I'm out.
Is there danger in food? Danger standing in line for food? Is there any connection there?
Well, there was that line in Crown Heights that went around the block, and there was a lot of antagonism, like people cruising by just screaming obscenities.
What was the line for?
Popeyes.
Oh my God.
Wow.
I've never
what
been
to
What
is it that good? I don't know. What is that? What is it different about it than any other chicken restaurant?
I heard it's just done perfectly. Like perfect execution.
Better than Chick-fil-A, all right.
Yeah.
Perfect execution.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It's simple. It's like marvelous in its simplicity. I guess. I haven't actually had it.
It sounds like you've tried it. It sounds like you were on that line in Crown
Heights. No, my fried chicken venture ended with a double down. That was it.
Well, what's that?
That was that, was it KFC? When they did the breaded chicken was the bun.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, there was grilled chicken in the middle with the breaded chicken.
Would you stab for an arancini ball?
No,
Dave, never.
No, I wouldn't. But I can understand the appeal to chicken. I eat a lot of chicken, roasted chickens. I like fried chicken, although I try not to eat it anymore too often. But I was thinking I would be a chicken, good chicken parm sandwich, or here I would be willing to be stabbed for. Gosh. Or possibly a rainbow cookie.
A rainbow cookie, like the Italian rainbow cookies? Yeah.
I once stood in line at Wind Sun Bakery for so long that I passed out, and they kept my spot in line, thank God.
Patrick said that the people next to him just kind of like pushed him along.
And yeah, and then I came to right before this, so I was very lucky.
Serena, anything?
You know, I'm one of those people who has food allergies. I'm technically celiac, but there's this incredible bagel spot in Lower Manhattan called Baz, and they make this bagel with like avocado and just like smoked salmon. I don't know if I'd be stabbed for it though.
But if they were
but
like
you would have a cheat day for it, is your point? Yeah, yeah. It's more like I would. You'd go all in.
Yeah, but I'm pretty much. I'm not really sure. Maybe if I was in Italy, I would be eating something and cheating and eating something with gluten in it.
I don't know. Or maybe if someone told me there was like a one night only something and they're only, I don't know.
You have to go to a terrible neighborhood and stand in line outside. And
No lines. Just more like one night only, best experience of your life. This memory will be with you forever.
But you might get stabbed.
Would I take a little like stab in the side of my leg? And no fatal. I can't hit any arteries. I don't know. No, it's ridiculous. The fact that even happened is crazy.
You would
crazy.
Have a checklist. You're like, I'm willing to get stabbed under these
if,
conditions.
Will I actually die? No. Okay, then I'm in. I don't know. Sounds ridiculous. So the New York City Council just passed legislation, I believe it was last week, that will ban the sale of foie gras in New York City beginning in 2022. So do you guys believe the production of foie gras should be considered animal torture? Wow, every single one of you is nodding your heads. Yes, we are not on TV. Please expand.
Can you please say, uh-huh?
Uh-huh.
So, okay, Dave, start. I mean, we'll go around the horn.
Well, I don't eat foie gras, but I watched a video about the, you know, showing the process of, they call it gavage, where they're force feeding the goose or the duck, and
my understanding is they force feed them corn, and the way that they force feed them, it expands the size of their liver to make it, what, more plentiful for us to eat or more delicious?
Just overfeeding it so the liver kind of gets fatty and blows up. But the way that they do it is just it's in a cage, and they put a cage on top of it and force this long tube down its throat to, you know, to get the corn in. It's pretty gross. And, I mean, I don't know. I have no problem with it being banned because I don't eat it, but.
But for those who'd be willing to be stabbed for foie gras, well.
I don't know. I think a livestock's goal is to eat itself to death. So I mean, it is being given its, you know, God-given instinct in a way, but it's being forced, and that tube is artificial. But I think any animal left to its own devices would eat itself to death. But Serena, what do you think on the foie gras?
You know, I think California is ahead of the game, and San Francisco banned it, and I don't know. I just think, why should we enjoy food like that much that we have to force feed an animal? Because who knows? It might hurt, you know.
Yeah, farmers are claiming it doesn't, but how do they know?
Yeah, how do you know how it feels? You know?
They should do it to themselves.
Do you like
foie
gras? Patrick, do you like foie gras?
I think, of course, people like it. You know, it's like McDonald's. People like that too. You might not be happy about it, that it tastes kind of pleasing and sweet. I mean, some people think it's disgusting. But like in Montreal, I mean, they put foie gras on everything, like on bagels and stuff. I mean, so yeah, I think it's a greasy, goes down easy, very sweet, very rich. You know, I don't know. I mean,
those are most of the things I try to not eat, actually.
But I don't seek it out. No, I mean, pate is kind of yummy, the way mayonnaise is kind of yummy, I think.
But I don't know about other pates. I mean, I know there's the traditional way of making it, or that a chef might tell you, but like we work with Pastis, and they're doing their pate actually using pork belly. Like, I think it just depends on how you want to shape and create your product, and you have creative license to call it pate. So maybe is someone going to make the the Milch, Patrick, of foie gras?
I was, that was my basketball nickname, Pate, because I had such a smooth stroke.
All right. Keeping on with animals and products and the environment, what favorite food would you be saddest to lose because of climate change? And what food or drink are you happiest to gain as a result of climate change?
I mean, mangoes. When I can grow a mango tree in my backyard in Brooklyn, I will secretly.
Is there going to be a new book called A Mango Tree Grows in Brooklyn?
Oh, I was just curious if it's like the food moves to you because of the climate change. Yeah. Got it.
Okay. I mean, this could be orange country in 600 years, you know, New York City.
Bring on the tropical fruits.
And things are warmer. I mean, secretly, people are not as anti-global warming personally. Like, they're happy when it's warm. They love that oranges are fresh for longer.
I don't know that global warming means that it's warmer everywhere. Hmm. We're also having, you know, the way that the seasons are going, the way that hurricanes are happening, the way things are flowing and moving. I don't know if it's just that we're all warmer, and therefore we're all feeling a little bit more like we live in L.A.
A little bit.
So, what do you guys said? I mean, what concerns you about climate change with food, if anything?
Well, I mean, I was going to say almond milk. Like, luckily we've got oat milk coming into the scene, but, you know, almonds require so much water, and in California, we're just not able to keep up with the supply. I don't know if I'd miss it. Like, I think avocados, like, they require the perfect combination of hot and cold weather, apparently. So
almonds out, avocados in.
Yeah.
And are avocados seasonal?
I don't know. I'm
ask any Mexican restaurant.
Mexico
probably not.
Would know.
Colombia, I know they advertise during certain parts of the year. It makes me think that's the time when they're mostly available. But
I think they're year-round in California, but there's definitely so much demand.
What other foods take up way too much water?
I'm trying to think.
Because I know down along those things in California, they're like, you have to outlaw all those little trees.
Well, yeah, like most of our produce comes from California. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to think, like, what else would be a good example?
Foods that are getting phased out.
What about coffee? Like, coffee might be impacted by climate change.
Mm. Yeah, they say coffee would be. That would be terrible. That would be the one that I'd be saddest to lose.
Wow, what would happen? Just that it would get too hot for the cacao bean to grow?
I'm not sure what the there was a list of foods that would be, you know, challenged by climate change initially, and coffee was one of them. Avocado was another one, but one that we would gain are weeds. So cannabis.
I was going to say any plant-based food we seem to be gaining.
Yeah.
But as a result of people being more focused on, like, carbon emissions, and I don't know, eventually are we not going to be allowed to have beef? Like, are there going to be laws that the carbon footprint is too big?
I never believed that the farting, the flatulence thing was actually causing such a massive thing. I think that was just used as a strategy to overturn meat eating. Because, I mean, how much could the cow farts really be changing the global climate? Is it a lot, really?
Actually, it's more about the, like, the amount of greenhouse gas emissions that, like, it's not just the cow farting. It's, like, the soil. It's just our practices, and also deforestation, especially in, like, Brazil, where a lot of the cattle are raised. So cutting down forests to eat beef, and I think, like, that's definitely a concern. But actually, animal agriculture contributes to a large portion of greenhouse gas emissions. I think it's, like, 20%.
So now that, do you support Burger King now because they have the veggie burger and Dunkin' Donuts? And now do you have to see them with the new eye? Because
I personally think that, I don't know, I couldn't support Burger King more because of their other practices. But I think it's great that they're trying to offer a product to vegetarians.
Meat eaters. Yeah. I mean, it's for meat eaters too. That's where it's an interesting battleground. They're probably converting a bunch of people just to eat less meat.
Yeah, and I think that it's more about not cutting meat out altogether, like taking meat out once a week or once a day. And just to make a small plug, Jonathan Safran Foer, who wrote Eating Animals, just he just released a book in September called We Are the Weather. And you should check it out because it's basically talking about how we can contribute to climate change with our decisions to, like, maybe cut back just a little on meat.
Ooh, eating. I'm having a little bad weather. The bagels got around back.
Meatless
Monday. We are the weather.
Meatless Monday. I think New York City was pushing for that as well, sort of in line with their conversations about foie gras. They were moving towards having a, I don't know, it's not a ban, but it's a...
meatless. Yeah,
like a suggestion or a campaign for schools. Yeah. It was supposed to be in government and schools.
Exactly. Yeah, like one day a week not having meat.
But then, yes, Patrick?
Oh, I had a question more about with animal farming for our consumption, isn't it a big issue with the amount of water we use on the animals and the crops that we use to feed them?
Yeah, the corn.
Too much water.
Too much water.
We need too much water for everything. That's going to be the big problem, right, in a few years, the water issue.
Well, in general, Americans just are consumption of things. I mean, any European friends I've had since I was young, it was my best friend Julia, her mom always had a sign in front of every sink that said, like, do not waste water. And it was like when you were in the shower.
Ice is a waste of water.
And you felt guilty for like running the shower to rinse your hair. And I'd come out of the shower when I'd be visiting or staying, having a sleepover.
For like an hour, you'd use up all the hot water.
No, it wasn't about the hot water. It was about the waste of water. And like if you're shampooing your hair, you don't simultaneously have to be under the water. I mean, I don't do that. I'm in my own house. I guess I'm very wasteful, but...
You leave the water on while you're brushing your teeth.
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's bad. I kind
of do, too. It's not good, but...
I have a few friends who will call me out on it.
That's why they don't make ice. You can't get ice in your drinks anywhere in Europe because it's a waste of water. Drink your Coke hot. You don't need it to be cold.
Is it that it's a waste or is it that it's not filtered?
I don't know. They don't, you can't get all their ices. Like you get one if you're lucky and it's like a sweaty little ice cube that melts in like seconds. What percentage, this is a question I have for everybody. What percentage of the food you eat likely comes from factory farms? Meat or, you know, grains or whatever. I mean, let's talk about your diet.
Say 15% maybe. But I mean, I'm trying to think if this includes produce. So if, say if I buy a carton of organic blueberries from Driscoll Farms, they also grow non-organic fruit, probably in an adjacent plot or something. So is that that's still considered factory farm, right?
Yeah,
so
that's a corporation making your food.
I mean, I guess unless you go directly to the farmer's market or directly to certain sources, I think everything's coming from a factory farm, from like a large-scale farm, no?
Yeah, I mean, but he said it right. I'm close, actually. I don't eat healthy, but I do eat very little from corporations. I mean, I'm mostly eating our meat or pasta from Biopasta and Farmer's Market. That's where we get all our salads. So that's like 70% of what I eat. Bob's Red Mill, is that a corporation? What about you?
Yeah, I try to keep it as low as possible because after working on eating animals, I just learned about these concentrated animal feeding operations or CAFOs. And like most of the farms in the U.S. are... CAFOs, so that's why it's important to support, you know, businesses like Heritage Meats and, you know, smaller companies that are really trying to do something innovative, like Frank Reese and Good Shepherd Conservancy in Kansas. Like they, you know, they just treat their turkeys really well. So now that I've seen the dark side, I'm like all about making conscious choices when eating meat. Probably a little bit sneaks into my diet, though, when I eat out. Like, there's no way... How could I know? And I have to, you know, you have to enjoy life. You have to go out.
Mm-hmm. And I think you also have to trust that the places that you're choosing to eat, you know, are maybe making...
No.
Well, that...
You can't really trust
that's
them,
the thing. You might think sitting in a...
Fancy restaurant.
In a fine dining restaurant that they've chosen to source well or to, you know, figure out where... Like, to pick and choose the farmers that they want to work with, but... A lot of times it just comes down to the bottom line.
To a single call they want to make to Sysco or to, you know, Dairyland and get everything from their toilet paper to their meat to the thing. And that laziness leads to anything. But if you did have to eat something out of a can, what would it be?
I really like tuna fish.
Really? Like, even the bumblebee kind?
Yes, I admitted to you the other night. I do buy
bumblebee. That's called dolphin fish now. What about you guys? Canned food?
I eat a lot of the... like canned mackerel and sardines and anchovies, like a wild planet. And they have those, like, you know, sustainably caught small.
I love the bottom trolling fish, you know, at the low end of the food chain.
Jessica, how about you?
Canned peaches. I'd sucker for that sugar water.
Yeah.
Dole, yeah.
When I have those, it's like there is that food taste memory from
I like the cranberry, too, from Thanksgiving. That has that kind of weird sweetness.
Oh, my God. My dad is obsessed with the canned, the jellied one. And mm-hmm. when it comes out of the can, it still has the ridges.
Yeah.
Anything, Serena?
Black beans.
Goya.
Yeah.
I'm all about rice and beans. It's great comfort food. And
well, rice is the foundation of your empire. Mm-hmm. Where do you get your rice for your rice balls?
We get it from a company in Sicily. It's a super fino rice. So it's like a risotto rice, but it's called Originario. Mm-hmm. They don't really sell it here. It's like a smaller, rounder grain than like Arborio.
And would you say your rice ball is better, arancini is better than most Italian rice balls in Italy because you source such good ingredients?
I mean, I've had Italians say that they've enjoyed the rice balls better than the ones they've had there. But, I mean, they're different because mm-hmm. ours are like more Americanized and have different flavors that you won't find in Italian rice balls. But I've had some there that are pretty amazing, so.
Because, you know, many people say Europe is getting lazy with their traditions and that they're so successful and exporting and so many tourists that they are no longer producing the rarefied small batch quality items, and that somehow, weirdly, in America, you get the better version of prosciutto or better version of arancini.
Do you have a minimum batch size for your arancini?
I mean, you can make samples for, you know, for maybe like, I have to make 50 or something like that, but typically the smallest batch would make like 2,000 rice balls or something.
Oh my gosh, 2,000 rice balls.
The rice goes a long way.
Oh my gosh, wow! And you're right here in Bushwick.
Yeah, just down the street.
Famous. You were back in the day. You were back in the day.
Yeah, we started at the rec room on Flushing Avenue. They just had a little kitchen that they weren't using anymore, so that's where we started. And
then you have the shop.
We used to do the block parties here that these guys used to throw. And yeah, and then when that bar closed, we had to leave, and there was a commercial kitchen just down the street here that was at an opening, so we moved in there, and we've been there since.
And how many, I guess, stands or retail shops do you have
right now? For the Mets.
We have one in the Lower East Side in the Essex Market, which had just recently moved, so there's a new Essex Market, and then we have some in the form of concession stands, two at Citi Field. There's one in Madison Square Garden, and we do suites at like Yankees and the Barclays Center and MetLife. And
you were at Coney Island this year, right?
Yeah, we've been there for a while.
And wow, that's really intense, really intense. The arancini ball everywhere. It's a great thing to eat. It's portable. It's delicious. When it's crispy, it doesn't get all over the place. You know, it stays a self-contained.
Do you have a signature ball for the teams? Like, do the Mets have a signature arancini?
Well,
what it would have like.
I was thinking more colors.
Mets are perennial losers. So what
no,
would you put?
I guess
how do you
maybe
make
like
a ball a loser.
Maybe it would have to be have some kind of orange filling.
Or maybe
I'm
there's no rice inside that one. It's just
no, for the Mets. That wasn't where I was going for it. We're going with that.
We switch it up. We all like right, we you know have different flavors for each new season. There was like an amazing Mets cheesecake ball this year.
All right, so the name is more.
I tried to do something orange and blue, but I was like, well, can you do a sweet potato with blue potato, or I don't know. It was hard to find.
That was not going to be a top seller. Yeah. I can tell.
So you're going to ask your Halloween question, your favorite one.
Well, it's not quite Halloween. It's all year round. If you could bring back just one person, famous or not, to have a drink or a arancini with,
avocado bagel.
Who would it be and why? Serena?
Anyone.
You know, Anthony Bourdain, because we're on the topic of food, it would be so cool to sit down with him and talk to him and have a meal. He asks the best questions.
But would you have said that when he was still alive also?
No, probably not, mm-hmm. because I took that for granted. But, you know, I was going to say Robin Williams as well, his comedy.
Mm-hmm. He was really, really energetic. How about you guys? Bring anyone back for a meal?
You took the words out of my mouth. I would have loved to have sat down with Robin Williams and had a meal.
Good.
and a drink. And just, yeah, because he's got a nice balance of heaviness and lightness, and be cool to see his take on anything, really.
Any heroes, food heroes?
Food heroes, I couldn't really think of any. I was, my first thought was Jim Morrison, and then Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh, wow. Take my wife, please. No, that wasn't him. What was Rodney Dangerfield was in so many funny movies. What were his signature lines like?
It was the whole no respect thing.
Yeah, no respect.
Would you, I don't know.
They like, say Johnny Carson said, I think, one of the times he laughed most in his 35 years as a late night talk show host for NBC was with Rodney Dangerfield. Like, they literally were buckled over laughing.
All right, and on the topic of death a little bit here, write the first paragraph of your obituary. So not the your name, who, you know, how old you were, all of that, but like the next paragraph. What would it say about you?
I think for me it'll say that we collaborated to get the Good Shepherd Conservancy off the ground, which is like one of the most powerful places for new farmers and tourists and people who just want to see animals come to. Be like a world site.
Yeah, I wish I could take credit for being involved with that, but my good friend Simone Friedman was pivotal with that. But yeah, doing something really meaningful, doing some investigative reporting that hopefully helps people related to the environment, food. And it might say that I was a late bloomer. You know, it took me a while to figure out that I wanted to write again, so...
You're at Columbia right now for journalism, right?
What are you looking to uncover?
Well, I want to look at ways that animal agriculture and certain practices are affecting human health, and looking at it through the lens of, you know, everyday people who might be impacted, might have had, you know, health issues. But also, you know, like, we talked about, there's people to profile who are doing things differently and innovating and trying to make small changes so that we get back to, you know, eating ways that we used to raise animals. But yeah, I mean, in general, I love like talking to people. So anything that, you know, allows people to better understand the human mind or something like that. But it would probably also say that I worried too much.
Oh, really?
My obituary.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm a worrier.
Will you stay in New York, do you think, to do this sort of next chapter of journalism? Or would you focus on another area?
Would you move to Salina, Kansas?
I actually, you know, there's this whole movement of local journalism. So I think it's important for people to get out of New York and go to these smaller areas.
Well, we saw that with the election.
Yeah.
Nobody knows what the hell people were thinking outside, like, Anderson Cooper's hot tub. You know, that seemed to be where all the journalism was coming from. And meanwhile, they were not understanding what was going on. My wife actually wants to do a kind of, what is it, where you go study or you go work abroad? Peacekeepers, Kennedy's organization, what's it called? Not Greenpeace, but within America. What's that?
Peace Corps.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt, our
Peace
engineer.
Corps. But in America, where students, 18 or 16-year-olds, would go to Kansas City, and the Kansas City would come to Brooklyn, and if you did that, it would really basically make everyone a Democrat.
That's your end goal for that. One. All right, Dave, what would you say?
This is a tough question, but...
You're allowed to be a little boastful or self-deprecating, as Serena said, she's a warrior.
I've been thinking in terms of, like, you know, you try to figure out what your personal values are and what if you have a purpose and what your purpose is and how you run a business related to those things. So I think it's a lot of that. It's yet to be determined because when I started a business, I didn't really think about any of these types of things. I'm like, well, it's a good idea. Let's try it out. But I would just hope that it's about relationships and being of service to other people, your friends, your family, and your business relationships, and hopefully those people would say that that having that relationship with me was a good experience and made the world a better place.
No, obits aren't like that. Your obit would say, if you died, no offense, right now, because, I mean, if things change, but he took, while most people are looking to be creative, you looked to a classic and perfected it and introduced it into new markets and broke ground in new neighborhoods through the most simple of ingredients, rice. And I did it into a new thing. So that's why I think you're perfect. So, because that was really genius. I mean, to think that you could go down in Bushwick.
I think there's a reason that one does not write their own obituary. Yeah. It's also good to have an outside lens and somebody who can see.
I'm going to write my own and submit it to
the
Times.
Well, we know that you're
going to
write your own.
Yes, I don't want anyone. I don't want to be up to anyone else to say who I what I was thinking.
He would definitely be disappointed with word choice.
I'll do it for free.
Oh, great. You'll become a posthumous writer.
Yes, exactly.
Because I spent too much time trying to figure this out and assuming it not happens soon. TBD. It would say, I don't know, I guess something along the lines of like, didn't play well with others or played well with others, found a way to work well with others and found sort of a happy medium, bringing people together over food and drink and sharing information. An enthusiasm for information, found a way to integrate it into the human element.
I like that.
Very nice. That's along the lines of what both were saying, but I mean, yeah that is very nice.
Yeah.
Using the table as an improving.
Yeah,
as it should be.
Found a nice setting.
Well, you know, the WeWork guy claimed that. He claimed that WeWork was the kibbutz of America. And that it would literally decrease suicide rates and that they would have daycare centers for the kids and it would be a commune. And then it totally went out of business. And it didn't go out of business, but its value is like at zero.
They even had the idea of after the office setting to do the, there was like, I don't know if it's called WeHome. I don't know what they called
it.
But they were doing like
WeBirth.
WeBirth.
Yeah. You can rent an office for an hour. WeBirth, it's everything.
You can rent a delivery room on the go with your doula.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
There's a WeWork driver that'll come pick you up.
Fantastic. That sounds like a great Uber partnership.
No, but he raised billions of dollars from people, and he walked away with basically a $1 billion severance.
They're the biggest real estate owner in New York City.
And in all the major cities, actually.
So what happened next?
He was a cuckoo bird, and they were so enamored by his charisma and energy and looks that they lost all this money. And lesser investors, like I would consider myself, I don't even invest, would be like, hey, all these very important rich people that I see are investing in him, let me follow them. But they were not even looking at the P&Ls. They were just totally in love. And so it just bothers me about the workers that get
fired.
That's
what his obituary will say, an attractive leader. Everyone just followed him.
Yeah, that, an attractive leader who led people to
demise. I don't even think
demise.
He's that attractive, but everyone keeps writing that he was
good
looking.
He's 6'5".
He had
married
nice hair,
to a Paltrow,
right?
Yeah.
Has nice hair.
No one said that about me. You were bald for when you worked at Reuters, aren't you?
Now I got great hair.
You know, it would be interesting to see how big a role looks play in, like, people getting funding for businesses.
Oh, I'm sure.
And
I'm sure
charisma.
It's tremendous.
You need a face. Personality.
And men get more funding than women because men will say outrageous things and appear much more confident, even though they might have nothing going on in their head about what's going on. They say, hey, I'll tell you I'm going to make it happen. Woman's like, it's not going to be easy. There's a lot of factors to think about with this. And they're like, boring, you know. It's weird. It's wrong.
I think introverts are underrated. There's a whole book about that called Quiet. It's like, you know, introverts are they have so much going on and they're not going to blurt it out and like boast about what they want to do.
Do they do? Do they slowly build the business or do they,
you know,
are they more of strong writers or they just don't get the opportunity because our world is so loud?
I think it's a combination, but it's like the quiet people, you know, look out for them and keep them close because chances are like they're really thinking through things. I haven't read the book yet, but I'll report back when I do.
Mm-hmm. Cool. We have to take a very
Be quiet is the theme of that.
We have
Not
to take
like
a very
that.
Quick. We have to take a very quick break. We will be back momentarily.
Be quiet.
Thank you. With Jessica,
slow.
Dave, and Serena.
Consider.
Mm-hmm.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Join Heritage Radio Network on Monday, November 11th, for a raucous feast to toast a decade of food radio. Our 10th anniversary Bacchanal is a rare gathering of your favorite chefs, mixologists, storytellers, thought leaders, and culinary masterminds. We'll salute the inductees of the newly minted HRN Hall of Fame, who embody our mission to further equity, sustainability, and deliciousness. Join us to explore the beautiful Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, where you'll taste and imbibe to your heart's content, and bid on once-in-a-lifetime experiences and tasty gifts for any budget at our silent auction. Join the party. Tickets are available now at heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
All right, welcome back. Thank you, Matt, for bringing us back. This is the Main Course OG broadcasting live. Oh no, that was my phone. Broadcasting live from the back of Roberta's here in Bushwick. We are in studio with Serena, Dave, and Jessica. So, Serena, you were at Columbia Business School as a grad student. We were talking about it a little bit before.
I wish the business school.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I
the journalism
have ever
school.
The GMAT.
Oh my gosh.
No, I'm kidding.
The journalism school. Are you working on any pieces right now? I know your focus, you said, is environment and food. Tell us a little bit.
Yeah, I'm actually taking environmental writing right now with a woman named Marguerite Holloway. She's a New York Times reporter. She has really been inspiring to, you know, look at something locally related to climate change and the environment. So I'm actually going to be interviewing chefs and in the city who are trying to source food differently, whether they are, you know, sourcing from heirloom varieties or, you know, I want to talk to Patrick about.
Well, we came up
heritage.
With a list for you. After the show, we'll send you tell you about these five chefs that we think really represent that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I also wrote about a bill in New York City Council for Bird Safe Glass, and basically, up to 300,000 birds die every year in New York City flying into glass. So there's little things that buildings can do, commercial buildings especially.
What have like a waiver a little bit?
These little like ceramic dots. And they actually help with energy efficiency for the building, too, so it's a plus. And that article was really interesting just because, like, birds, you never notice them. You think pigeons are the only birds that live in New York, but when you look around, there's, like, incredible, you know, birds of prey and owls, and we're under a migratory flyway here in New York, so hundreds of birds coming through every year.
Do pigeons ever fly at night?
I have no idea. But yes. Well, so I was going to say, there was an article in the Times that every year during the 9/11 memorial time, I guess it's like the week or so that the lights that go up to mimic the World Trade Center, the towers, it's right in the middle of migratory season. And apparently there's like hundreds of thousands of birds that are flying over the New York area. And every 20 minutes, there's a team of people that sit and watch from a certain vantage point and have binoculars. And if they count, I think it's up to like 1,000 birds, they flip off the lights for 20 minutes because they're so confused, they're just following the light. So
exactly.
I don't know if that was in your studies, but I thought that was very cool.
It's really cool. There's actually a second bill about that. You know, a lot of buildings just keep their lights on for no reason all night. And not only is it a nuisance when you're trying to sleep, if like there's a really bright building nearby, but birds are attracted to it. So I'm really impressed with Wild Bird Fund. They're taking in like all the birds in the city. And if you find a bird, you know, contact New York City Audubon and they'll help you or Wild Bird Fund. But yeah, Columbia's really, really hard. I'll just say that.
What did they make you do? Like read 500 articles in a day or write me an article in 30 minutes. I mean, how do they teach you? How do they train you?
Well, they actually, in my reporting class, a Nation writer, David Haidu, he's actually a music writer, and then this former Associated Press reporter, Dolores Barkley, they were teaching us how to, you know, do drills, like, you know, get a lot of information all at once, and then we'd have like an hour to write like a 500-word piece. That's and cool. Then I'm also taking an investigative writing class with another New York Times journalist, Reed Abelson, and she's pretty incredible, but she is teaching us literally how to search every like database, how to do a Google search. And one of the most interesting tips that I've learned is if you're ever curious about someone, put their name in quotes and then write "and lawsuit" or "and arrest," and you'll be surprised at finding dirt on people pretty quickly. But the key is you have to add different creative words to Google.
Interesting ways to get around the system. What do you think of the MDASH?
It's interesting you say that because it's overused sometimes, but I love it at the same time. You don't want to go crazy on it, but it's just the perfect tool when you don't want to add too many commas and you want to really like emphasize a clause. Mm-hmm. Make it stand out and sound
really
smart.
It's an independent clause, right? It carries an independent clause with it. It's not parentheses, which can be anything. It's actually a sentence within a sentence.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a way to just delineate it even more. And especially if you have commas before or after it, it would be really confusing to have like another two commas. And so it really makes it pop out at the reader, I think. But yeah, you have to be careful about
too many.
And also there's like two different types of M dashes.
We know how to do the long one. You need to hit three letters. It's a really long one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Control app.
Patrick's telling you how to the shortcut key for how to put it into your Microsoft.
Yeah, I'm not super brave about the three dashes. I'm just into
the two.
No.
The three. You need to hit three buttons to get one long one. To get a true M dash, my Mac, you have to hit three buttons on your computer for the computer.
No.
If not, you get the little dash.
Oh,
which
I
is
thought
not
you meant. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
No.
Three dashes, I don't know. I've been known to use three dots instead of et cetera.
That's a big. Like, you can't do that. You can't do that. But one of the crazy things about Columbia is, like, just meeting so many interesting people, like, you know, the guy who broke Theranos scandal. This Friday, we have people from Parkland, from the shooting, some of the students coming to talk to us about reporting on trauma. So I just really, I'm learning so much, and I like how they look at trauma. They look at, you know, nuanced ways to cover issues and how to be more sensitive and ethical in reporting.
How do you feel about adverbs?
Oh, those are a big no-no. Once I realized how many I was using, I started
stopped
to...
quickly.
Yeah, I stopped real quick.
Real quick.
No, I just was like, it's kind of funny. You just kind of start scratching out a lot of stuff you write and just rewriting it. But it's become more of a habit now to leave those out because what do they really add? Yeah. You know.
I was with someone that, you know, you're really cutting edge doing your work and line of work. I love what you do with eating animals. But I was interviewed by someone from CBS, and I was like, oh, how many full-time food people do you have working at CBS News? And they were like, dedicated, zero. But we have these two people that also cover food. I was like, how many business people do you have? They're like, you know, 600. I'm like, you guys are idiots not to think that food and chefs and agriculture and global warming doesn't deserve two people. So through journalism, you're kind of showing that food is a lens through which, you know, you can have entire...
I worked in PR for several years, and if I think back to the people that we were pitching and who was the different name editors on the masthead, especially before all the online publications, most of the time food was encompassed into like the lifestyle section. There was not anybody who was specifically, it wasn't that food or the culinary scene was their background. Now that there's more publications dedicated to food and it's been trendy for the last 10 years. Yeah. No, and animals and agriculture, sure. But it used to just be that there was the catch-all team for anything that vaguely fell into that category.
The good-looking people who like to go out at night, you know? And no, there's real hard-hitting news stories about food. Gastronomy is a serious discipline, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, food can be a lens where you look at really difficult topics that otherwise would probably be hard to talk about. You know, climate change, we've heard the same story about storms over and over again and weather. So it's cool to look at chefs, I think. And you bring up a good point. I think that gastronomy is like an amazing way to bring all of these other subjects together.
Our friend Mark Ladner is one of the people that started Heritage Foods Wholesale. He refused at Del Posto while he was still chef there to sell oysters, to serve oysters from the West Coast, because of what had happened in Japan. So I was actually thinking about with the nuclear this and that, you know, and that the water wasn't as healthy. And I was like, what an interesting thing that Mark is the only guy I've ever heard stand up for some environmental cause as related to the Pacific. The government didn't, you know, maybe some watch groups did, but he was an actual guy. He's like, the 25,000 people that eat my restaurant each year will not be served that because I'm making a health decision for them. You know, more and more people are going to be thinking that way.
Jessica, well, I was going to say, Jessica, what's your lens of the culinary scene through being at Vinegar Hill House?
Oh, classic restaurant.
Yeah, the hits. My lens, I mean, just the passion that goes into it. Like, you find so many people from so many different walks of life, like, expressing themselves and, like, just their dedication to the environment or like the people and places and, like, you know, tradition and progression and doing it all, like, under the same kind of, like, not shaking up the machine but using a different fuel. Like, yeah, just...
Oh, that's really
their
cool.
Their machine has been the same for ever. Our country shop has been on there since day one, and that was 15 years ago.
But I think it must also be interesting as different chefs come in, as personalities change. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gene Adamson is still the owner and sets the overall vibe.
Mm-hmm. Most of the people there are the same.
Yeah.
Clients, we actually have, and wait staff. Bartender, who's that blonde bartender that was there?
Amanda.
Yeah, she's been there forever.
And Quinn Lay is back. He's it's not like he changed the whole menu. He's just...
He's a shepherd.
Yeah.
Inventor, which is great.
Yeah, keeping it on course, bringing it back home. And yeah, and it's just, we're coming into natural. We just finished Goat-tober.
Yeah.
Which was enlightening and interesting as far as, like, the animal aspect of it. I didn't know about goats, normally born in twos and,
And you can never have a goat. If you buy a pet goat, you always need a companion for it. They must never be alone.
Yes, exactly.
I always say that for the humane thing, thinking that some Brooklyn kid's going to buy a goat and it's going to be totally sad in their backyard.
Goats buying two, yeah.
Heritage is not exactly about saving those pet goats here in Bushwick, but we're a little bit more about the...
although people who think, who don't eat meat, I mean, 20% of our animals die of old age. Mm-hmm. I mean, Frank says that because they're the breeders. They stay. They're not killed. The problem with every animal dying is those dead-end animals on factory farms. Frank has 13-year-old turkeys on his farm. So, I mean, many of them, in a way, they become pets because they're not laying productively anymore, but they're allowed to live out their life and die a painful death on the field, on some dusty field. I mean, sometimes I kind of do want to take myself out. I mean, if I'm really falling apart when I'm 90 years old, I do not want to go to hospice and have my kids visiting me as I'm, like, vomiting off the side of the bed. Like, I just don't want that. I'm
writing it down. You can sign that later.
I want you to take me to the Staten Island Ferry. I want that to be the last thing. All right. And you leave me, I'll just fall off the back. So, all right, Dave, what have you learned running a business that has a focus on a single item, and what's next for you?
A single item business, I think the simplicity of it it's efficient, so you don't really have to worry, you know, like if you have a full service restaurant with a full menu and you're sourcing all these different items, like it, what we do is pretty simple. But I think that you have to be really deliberate in, you know, like a marketing strategy, like where does this belong, where does this work, because it's not a full service restaurant. And if you were to just open, you know, I think you just have to be really careful about like where you open. Like for us, the stadiums make sense, because and concerts, we do a lot of like festivals and concerts. So
does the Essex Market spot work?
Yeah, the old one, I think a lot of people either didn't know it was still open or it was kind of on its way out. So that place was really slow. But since the new one opened, it's been good. There's been a lot of
community. Is that because it's more of a destination? It's shiny and bright.
Yeah,
movie
theater. I mean, yeah, exactly. It's a new spot. I mean, we'll see how it plays out over time. But
who are you next to at the Essex Market?
We're next to a sandwich shop called Heroes and Villains. There's on the other side, there's a company called Nordic Preserves that does all the smoked fish.
Yes. I actually like some of their things.
Yeah.
Weird stuff that I'm like, where are you curing this? I get the sense it's like in that big Swedish lady's bathtub or something like that, but it's still delicious.
Yeah.
Do you do any collaborations?
Can you
put some smoked fish in that? No, that might be gross.
I mean, we've partnered with a few different, like we're actually using some of the Beyond Meat stuff to do some like vegan versions of, you know, that, and we've done things.
How do you get a delivery from them? 50-pound cases of a pate of sorts.
They have a number of food service products like that come in, you know, say 5-pound bags of ground sausage or, you know.
Does it cook like meat? Same time. Temp.
It's quicker, I think. You know, it's because it's essentially already cooked. You just have to heat it up, and I think it's about like what you're mixing it with.
How long can it stay fresh?
Shelf life, I mean, it comes frozen, so I'm thinking it's at least, you know, it would be at least a year frozen.
And fresh?
Fresh, that I don't know. I'm not really sure.
You use so much of it all at once.
I don't really eat it myself, right. But,
Now, do you make great balls all the time? I mean, have you had a period where your balls were at their best and other periods where something was lacking? Or, I mean, how often do you produce a ball that's like 98% or higher in terms of your dream of what a ball, and where does your average lie?
I mean, the ones that we, you know, that kind of work, we haven't really changed. And I mean, incidentally, I don't really eat rice balls anymore, because I mean, I just
sick of them.
No, it's not that. I got to the point where I was really heavy and I wasn't really in good.
You look great.
But I lost a lot of weight because I watched what I eat and, you know, kind of changed my diet a little bit. But, yeah.
And would your ball come out better if you only made 10 in your kitchen? Or does it come out better when you make 10,000 at a factory?
I mean, if it's easier to make a high-quality product if you're making a small batch. I mean, the trick is to try to, you know, maintain that quality if you're scaling it and making a lot. But...
wow, that's pretty cool.
What's next for you guys? Serena? New York Times Magazine?
No, I don't think so yet. I gotta prove that I can write first. I'm gonna go to Pennsylvania, actually, and look at some of the concentrated animal feeding operations there, the CAFOs, in Lancaster County, potentially, and sort of how that contributes to, like, the river, the Susquehanna River that flows through Pennsylvania down into the Chesapeake. That's probably going to be my longer piece that I write. And yeah, I think just, you know, continuing trying to figure out where I want to go next geographically. And I love New York, but it's a really intense and expensive place to live. So
will you subscribe, Emily and I, to your first newspaper when you come out with it? We want to be your first subscribers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm going to leave you with my credit card
number. At least just the link to your first, your long feature article.
I want papers. I want to get.
What is she going to call it? The Serena Snyder
printed out 30 feet of my doorstep. Okay.
If you could print a hard copy for Patrick,
no,
that'd be
newspapers.
Great.
I would love to have local newspapers.
But
newspaper.
You know, podcasting is something that a lot of my classmates are looking to do, and not writing. So being here today, you know, I think podcasts are so fun. Maybe you guys will pull me in that direction.
So you're categorizing this show as fun. Well, it's a day of firsts.
We also have a great... No, there's a great show on the network called Meet in Three, and that is a more produced, edited, short... I guess, what is their...
Patrick in French, it's called Viande et Trois.
Yeah, the shout-out should be going to What Doesn't Kill You. Katie Kiefer covers CAFOs a lot.
Oh, yeah, Katie Kiefer in What Doesn't Kill You covers CAFOs a lot. Maybe you come back and be a guest on her show. She was actually a host here on The Main Course once. Very,
yeah.
Very smart.
Well, yeah, that would be cool. I guess I should distinguish between, like, live radio and podcasting. But I consider the
audio.
Well, we're
not
radio
because
journalism.
We don't broadcast on the waves. But everything else is radio. It's on a schedule. It's in the studio. People don't just send in their little, you know, zip drives with all their information. It's actually
everyone broadcasts here.
Yep. Or I would say 90% of the shows. The board actually set a limit on the number of shows that could be sent in, assuring that Roberta's and, you know, this energy would be part of each show, even though no one can see it. Although we have talked about putting a movie camera up here.
Patrick wants
a YouTube
channel.
The way they do
Mike
Francesa's sports show. He just has like a bag of Cheetos and he's just sitting there drinking like a tub of Coke.
All right. On that note, we have another show up next, A Taste of the Past. So we are going to thank you guys for being here in the studio with us. And we hope to see you all at the Radio Gala on Monday, November 11th. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/gala. Thanks, guys. The Main Course OG is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.